You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings once again, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is a good friend, Daniel Jacob. Daniel is a visionary writer, personal and business consultant, and conscious channel living in the greater Seattle area of the U.S. In 1991, he began receiving transmissions from a soul collective known as the Reconnections. In their first messages, the Recons described their collective as all those parts of your expanded self you had to forget about to become human. At the time, Daniel took this as a personal message concerning their relationship to him. However, over the years, people all over the world have received comfort, guidance, and personal growth through various ideas they impart. In 2004, he published a CD called The Star Children, in which he imparted new ideas concerning our next generations. His two websites, www.reconnections.net and www.thestarchildren.com, contain innovative and mind-expanding concepts dealing with physical and planetary transformation, spirit-empowered relationship, ascension consciousness, and bioenergetic healing. His current focus is helping individuals, families, and small businesses weather the stormy seas of Obama-Trump care to ensure that as many folks as possible can be cared for and supported as planet Earth goes through her changes. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Hi there, Zany. It's always a pleasure to be in your presence. It's always been fun to do these little fireside chats, and it's been a while for us, so I really feel like coming home and revisiting an old friend.
Well, I feel the same way, visiting you in the Danielverse.
Visiting me in the Danielverse,
my goodness. You have certainly opened my mind to multidimensional thinking, that's for sure.
Well, I appreciate that. I try to share as much as I can, and it's real interesting when people reflect back what the ideas seem to be doing for them, whether it's a positive or a negative response. Sometimes people go, I don't know if I want to believe that. And then, you know, listening to their reasoning behind why it scares them or turns them off or whatever is just as important as the other people who say, you know, reading that particular piece saved my life or saved my day or saved my marriage or whatever it was. So it's been a long, been about 27 years, you know. That's been a while.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And that seems like a long time, but, of course, in the scheme of things, it's a puff of smoke.
It's a heartbeat, isn't it?
Yeah, just barely. Yeah, one heartbeat. Amazing, though.
One blink of the eye.
Just a blink. Here we are, and here we are not.
And there we were.
And there we were, maybe. And nobody will remember. Well, we might. We might remember. Maybe we might not.
Well, and I think that's what this journey is all about these days, is remembrance, you know. People don't just learn things, they remember them from the vast storehouse that we have available to us, whether you want to refer to that as the great data bank in the sky or the Akasha or whatever you like to label that point of input that we have to expanded possibilities and thoughts. It's amazing. Sometimes when you tap into it, you feel like you've struck oil, and it's just like a gusher. And you know, you have to sit down and write, or compose a song, or poetry, or whatever you do to express within yourself what those tones are doing inside you.
Mm-hmm.
like to think of myself as a tonal translator.
Whether
I'm translating from spirit into here or whether I'm listening to what someone else is saying, and then I add on to it maybe an expanded, more multidimensional perspective to it so that it has room to breathe. You know, too often our reality boxes keep us claustrophobic and we don't have room to breathe. And so then you knock out a few of those walls and all of a sudden people are going, wow, there's so much more here.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, of course, if we can recognize that duality is not real and that we're multidimensional and that we have infinite possibilities and ways of expressing that multidimensionality besides just black or white or good or bad, heaven or hell, then it opens up a whole new world.
And in a way, you know, that was sort of one of the topics that you seemed attracted to a few weeks back when we were talking to it on the Facebook. The whole manifestation of multidimensionality in physical form and how it expresses itself in various individuals, because it's almost like everybody around us is television screens or mirrors showing us different aspects of who we are, who we could be or have been. And we get a chance to explore that through their experience as well as through our own.
Right.
So it's like there's so much that a multidimensional person is and can do and has done that you just can't fit it all into one body or one life. So you have a universe, spelled Y-O-U, universe, where everyone and everything not necessarily is you, but reflects some part of you. And we know that because in order to see them, it has to pass through your perceptual grid. And by so doing, it sort of becomes like you. It looks like you. The way you interpret life says more about you than it does about what you're interpreting. And the reconnections, you know, when you were talking about their description of themselves, you might say they've been the storage facility where I left the rest of me while I came here to be focusing in the area of being Daniel, with Daniel's particularities and characteristics. I could be so many other things, but here I came to be this, doing that for a specific period of time. And so when the time comes, you know, they approached me and they said, we're ready to give you some more of this if you're ready to absorb it. And sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I want to close the cupboard and go, not now, come back. Then they're polite. They say, okay, we'll come back around when you're ready.
But
I think the topic we were talking about at the time was human hybrids and how we are so multi-partite that, you know, there are parts of ourselves that we can, you might even take apart like components, and each component of ourself, which the recons refer to as aspects, illustrate some part of our personality, our need structure, our giftedness, or whatever. I think at the time we were talking about the animal, vegetable, mineral connection we have with the earth. And we know that in our bodies we have minerals. We ingest them through the foods we eat and so on and so forth. But we also have these crystalline connections within the planet and within our body that is that particular aspect of us. And then also we know we discover totem animals. Many of us actually even have animal-like features to our bodies. You know, we identify more with certain types of animals than with others. And when others look at us, they say, you know, you remind me of a bird, or you remind me of a bear or a lion or whatever. And that then becomes a little bit more of a piece of the puzzle of who you are, is when you can bring out that particular bird-like or lion-like aspect, an eagle, if it's an eagle, you know, whatever whatever touches you. It's interesting, too, that we have big controversies over dietary patterns. You know, there are people who think it's sinful to eat meat. Then there are others who couldn't get along without it. And just like in the animal kingdom, you know, there are herbivores and there are carnivores. And we identify with those aspects of our being. And if we can be less judgmental and just more observant and embracing of the differences, and even amused by them, you know, instead of reactive of them, you know, it can be an amazing journey. It can be like a journey through a museum, a great museum of self.
Well, it would certainly be transformational at the very least.
To just be able to, instead of judging it when you see it, instead of judging it, just in a way you kind of appropriate it as part of self. You know, maybe it's a small part, maybe it's a larger part. I have a dear friend who's a Guatemalan shaman named Amrock, who came to visit us in Seattle back in the mid-2000s, 2004, I think she was there. And in one of the workshops, she had us all being apes and monkeys, you know, so we were swinging around the room and doing whatever we did. And they do this a lot in drama development classes and in all kinds of consciousness-raising classes where people, they begin this thing called pretending. And what is pretending but creating a space and then taking care of that space, preparing it for the time when that particular manifestation fills that space. So when you have a brand new car, you build a garage that's going to house it, and one day you open the door, put the car in the garage, and all of a sudden it's fulfilled its purpose. There are people who will make preparations in consciousness, either through meditation or through deep breathing or toning or any one of a number of other tools, yoga, movement, dance, and so on. And they create a space whereby the energy of a particular animal or creature can come and make a visit. You know, they can host that energy there, whether it be the bear energy or whether it be the cat, you know. And you create that space. I loved a book that was written years ago called Ecstatic Trance Postures, where the lady who wrote the book, and I'm trying to remember her name now, it was something like Felicity something. But she had seen some of these artifacts of old ancient art, and she looked at the animals and people, and they were in particular positions with their hands outstretched, or maybe they were standing in a, you know, pointing in a particular position. And she found that when she would assume that position and accompanied by some deep breathing and visualization and meditation, she could actually call the energy of that host animal in to her. And the book is called Ecstatic Trance Postures, and I'm trying to think of her name, but you can probably find it on Amazon. But it tells us how all we need to do in order to access these sometimes very far out aspects of ourself is just find the right key that activates that particular doorway within us. And sure enough, you know, the cat comes wandering in, or the bear comes thundering out.
Yes.
And it can be very, very enlightening, and also it can be a little bit frightening at times if you're not ready for it, you know. But then who's to say we're not ready for it? Because wouldn't it be happening to you or for you if you weren't ready on some level?
That's true.
And this is true also of what they call alien-human hybrids, where we look at the various extraterrestrial races having seeded humanity with DNA and various other aspects. And it's very, very possible for a discerning person to see various alien races in the physical features of people as they walk around. And I learned this years ago from a shaman friend of mine who was walking through Pike Place Market here in Seattle with me. Mm-hmm. And he looked over and he said, "You see that girl there? She's an angel." And sure enough, I looked at her from a certain angle, and I could see exactly what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. She had an angelic aspect to her, something that I would consider to be angelic. And he'd say, another person, "There's a bird, there's a raven, there's, you know," and so on and so forth. And that got me thinking, and later I developed it quite a bit in some of the writings when we talked about multidimensionality and selves, the psychology of selves, where we say we're not just one unified self, but we're a conglomeration of selves like a tapestry with different patches that are sewn together, and each patch stands for one realm or kingdom or state of consciousness. And when those patches come together to form that tapestry, then you're that particular recipe of personality. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What can I say?
Well, I guess everything is a learning experience.
Either that, or it's a mind-blowing experience.
Or it's a pisser-opper.
You know, that first year in 1991, when the recons were getting ready to come into my life, or you might say out of my life, so to speak. They were always there, but it was just where they were ready to come out and be part of my world. I was in meditation one day, and I received a message that said, "Come to New Mexico. And certain extraterrestrial energies wish to talk to you." And I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm going to get picked up by a flying saucer or something like this. But actually, it wasn't like that. Not to say that those experiences don't also exist, too. But for me, it was more like as I drove across that desert, it was like I was being downloaded from my crown chakra with pulses or tones of energy, which turned out to be bundles of messages that would later manifest themselves in the form of these transmissions that I would write. When you get a message like that, it comes to you all in one big shot. It's just like, boom. It isn't sequential like we're used to. So if you're going to make it intelligible to someone who hasn't had the experience of channeling or prophecy or receiving of spiritual information, you're going to have to downstep that information into sequential words and phrases. And so my ability to be able to do that in a way that not only captures the meaning of the message being said, but the overall feeling and tenor of it, you know, just like the atmosphere of that particular message. And some channels will actually express that in verbal behavioral shifts and changes. When they do sessions, they'll go into a trance, and they will seem to be taken over by something completely different. But really, all they're doing is just closing one door or kind of pushing it to one side and opening another within themselves. You can't really bring something into you that isn't already part of you in the first place. That's what I mean. It's not like people are afraid to open their channel to receive new information because they're afraid they're going to be invaded by something that isn't them. When we're talking about this new technology of universal oneness and the fact that we are all one with everything and everyone at every time and every place, we're just abbreviated and compacted into various fragments of that same one self, so that nothing can really enter into you that isn't you, that doesn't want to, need to come out and express itself, even if that expression is turbulent at times.
Mm-hmm.
And people got scared to death by the movie The Exorcist when it came out in the 70s, but the 70s was also the time when Jane Roberts was writing from the Seth energy. And there was also the time when many different people were writing. One of my favorite channel writers at that time was Ken Carey. When he
I loved
Return of the Bird Tribes.
Yes.
Starseed Transmissions.
Uh-huh.
Probably one of the most resonant souls that I've read who does this kind of work.
Absolutely.
But there are so many others, Jack Purcell and Lazarus.
I remember
Daryl and Bashar.
Bashar, yes, of course. And then there's another one that wrote the, now my mind is going blank, but it's a whole series of books about the nature of the universe. And his main character is Zush, if that rings any bell.
Yes, I remember Zush. Sure.
Yes, his writing was fantastic.
I think his name is Robert something.
Yes. I have about five or six of his books here.
Yeah. I used to write for Sedona Journal of the Merchants, and he would have some transmissions in there as well as some of mine.
They don't seem to hold up. I mean, today's transmissions don't, to me anyway, seem to hold up quite as well as those days when we were maybe a little more new to things.
Well, we were caught off guard, really, in many ways back then. Mm. We didn't really know what to expect after having, several years of precedence to this. I mean, way back when the they would originally hear those tappings and knockings and call them haunted houses and spirits, where they first began to have seances and things like that.
Yes, I remember.
Everybody was either scared to death by it, or they were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, completely intent on hearing what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, people have been sort of almost inundated with material and information, just with the rise of the Internet. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most powerful times in the growth of the Reconnections work has been during the time when Spirit Web was up. I don't know if you remember Spirit Web, but Rene Mueller did such a beautiful job with that site, where because he used it as a showcase for so many new energies that were coming in. And many of us were able to write and be seen and heard, sometimes for the first time on Spirit Web. And his generosity, he put a lot into that. And finally, he just sort of kind of faded out of that and into something new. He does a lot of artwork and graphics and of his own. And he's a channel in and of himself. But that was a powerful time. And that was right around 2001 when we had the 9/11. And that was probably it was like 2001, 9/11 was the wake-up call for anybody who was beginning to learn about the Reconnections. And that's when we started having our events. We had some, event in Scotland and one in Glastonbury and Portland. We had an event back in 2003, and we had one in the Olympic Mountains here in Washington.
Mm.
And we put a lot into those and got a lot out of it, too. It was wonderful, wonderful experiences. But you might say that there was a rise up of the spirit here in America, but around the world, to support what was beginning to happen in terms of terrorism and all that sort of stuff, when people were lashing out, probably because they didn't know what else to do with the new incoming rush of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a wonderful time that we went through. We've gone through different stages of evolution. We're enjoying our time on Facebook now with our friends out there. It's a wonderful format to share in. And my son's been working on updating the Reconnections website. He's a graphics media type fella. And so hopefully we're hoping to this year get that refurbished and up and running. That's www.reconnections.net. And part of it is the Star Children, which is another whole soul group that we began working with in 1997, just about the time that Princess Diana and Mother Teresa passed. That energy started coming in, too. And we start talking about the children of the new earth, crystal kids, indigo star kids, rainbow children, dolphin children. There's so many names for them now. And that's a powerful situation, too. And so we look at the different subsets of the new kids as they come in. And again, it's sort of like some of them are a mix of different characteristics and aspects, and others major in just one thing, almost like a specialist is when in the medical field. You know, I'm going to just major on this. Sirian energy, for example, is very focused on raising the communication beyond words and concepts into tonal resonance, where people will communicate on many more levels besides just hearing and words and ideas, where they'll send out emotion and vibratory resonance with each other in preparation for the time when we all go telepathic.
Yes.
And many of the extraterrestrials who work with people on the planet will communicate telepathically. And we have to get ready for that. And fortunately, a lot of it involves preparing the mind, the 3D mind, for the infusion of new energy, new stuff coming in.
Are you familiar with the idea that we're moving into a more crystalline realm?
Yes, absolutely. And they're actually discovering that in autopsies they're doing on people, too.
That wasn't calcified fluoride?
There is some crystalline material being found even in brain matter.
Huh.
And a lot of it's being ingested or absorbed as an amplifier, so to speak, for the tones that are coming in from various dimensions, all to assist us as we go through this process on the planet. Just like people have a huge tendency right now to retain water. And a lot of us we kind of begrudgingly retain water, but water is an incredible connector or a conductor of energy. And so as we keep it in various parts of our bodies where it normally wouldn't be there, we find our ability to be able to conduct and receive and transmit energy has been amplified. So that becomes a power.
I've also heard that having sufficient water in the system balances the negative and positive charges, and that it increases one's psychic capabilities.
It can, yes. It can. Now, you know, being able to go into that middle place where you're neither positive or negative, but you're just kind of like right in the middle place. That was something that was really explored and mastered by Robert Monroe and the work he's done with HemiSync and the Monroe Institute in Faber, Virginia. Now, that goes way back, but he was the one who wrote three groundbreaking books on astral travel and deep meditation, Journeys Out of the Body, far journeys and the ultimate journey, which was about death, and he wrote that just before he passed. And the work still goes on back in Virginia, where they go and use these headsets, and they work with tones that are called binaural beats, where they, in the headset, a tone will move from the right side to the left side and then to the right side, and it'll randomly move about, and it causes your consciousness to focus with it.
Wow.
It begins to follow it, track that underlying beat, whether you're listening to somebody talk or whether you're listening to music or whatever. The brain picks that up and starts to track that, and it can take you right into, I believe it's theta consciousness, which is the most open you would be to astral travel, as well as receptivity for messages to receive.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because last weekend I went down to Cheryl Scott's Volcano Ubuntu Center, and the event that she had held there was none other than Dr. Robert Monroe's Hemisync.
Oh, isn't
recording.
That great?
And she has a beautiful space that was built up on top of the garage, and I hadn't seen it finished yet, but it is just so beautiful with, you know, wood floors and futons on, you know, in all the places where one would be laying down and listening to the music. And she and I were under our own pyramids.
So wonderful.
I got to finally experience pyramid power.
Well, that is so, that's so dynamic, I tell you. There was a fellow down in California years ago who had built this table in this particular room, and he had a pyramid over it, made of that copper, you know.
Right.
And then it was surrounded by crystals. I mean, the place was a hotbed of energy transmission. And you lay down on that table, and let me tell you, you feel like you just went, you just put the chicken on the Barbie.
Right. Right.
You're being sizzling before long.
Yes.
And, we had a trainer. We had a remote trainer. We still do. I don't know if he's functioning much as he was before, but he's a remote trainer for Monroe here on the West Coast. And he would come out, and we sponsored him at our houses, or I had him at my center once. And we would lay out on mats and put these earphones on. He had it all hooked up to a master system. And you'd play a tape, and then you'd all get together and discuss it, discuss what the effects were and the feelings. And, boy, we saw some incredible openings in people as a result of that work. And so, once again, you know, you open up different channels of knowledge and communication and remembrance. And one of the biggest things I think the recons would say to us as they approach us is, never worry about being overwhelmed, or never worry about being, you know, taken over, because it's all it would be your choice to step up your vibration, to move to a different place. And of course, it feels like a rush. It feels like somebody has a hold of you. That somebody is always an aspect of you, and they can't, if you believe this, they can't do you harm or change your program beyond that which you've already agreed to. We call them soul contracts.
Interesting.
But there is the fear factor, and it's being spread not only on the internet, but it's also in so many different parts of the media, starting with The Exorcist and moving throughout there. And of course, when you get into the more fundamentalist religious systems, they have fears about that too, but in a way, some of the underlying fears is the loss of control that system would have over you if you were to step into a new place of consciousness In fact, you may walk out of that, but into something else, you know, something more suited to where you are at that point. And again, if people feel disinclined to go towards something or to read something or to pick it up, then don't do that. Mm. You know, it's very important to follow your inner voice, follow the inclination of your energy, so that if you, even if you're listening to me say it's okay, don't be afraid. If you go towards something and you're afraid of it, it's, you're not ready yet to walk into that. So, But if there are some out there who might be listening who say, you know, I just needed somebody to tell me that it was going to be okay because I've had these desires to move into these realms and to explore that, but I have these leftover fears from when I was in the church or when I was under a certain teacher or I was here, there, or anywhere, and somebody just said it's okay, and I was able to step forward, and it was okay.
Wow.
So I don't know. You know, some people are ready, some people aren't, and well, however you've got to define it, that's going to be your... You got to run that thing from your side of it. You know, this
right,
is your pathway,
right,
your journey. You're not. There's nobody can tell you what's best for you but you. And that includes guides and teachers. You know, if I get a message that sounds like it might be coming from the reconnections, but there's something in me that doesn't want to do it, they'd be the first one to say, don't do that yet. Don't host that. Don't allow for that to happen because you're not ready. It might be the rightest thing in the world, but you're not ready. If you're not ready, then don't do it.
Well, interesting. So when people are looking out at the world and all the craziness that's going on and all the contrary information that gives several different sides of the story, and all of the concerning things that are used to create fear, which is false evidence appearing real, how do people separate or divide their attention from that and allow it to be, yet while feeling that they've done something constructive to disengaging from it?
Well, if you can find the good in it, whatever it is, because there always is something. And by good, I'm not talking about qualitative evaluation of whether it's helpful or not, but rather just the worthiness of it to be, to exist in the world. If you can find the purpose that something might be there, then you become like a screen door, so you don't have to deflect it or run from it. You can just let it pass through you like a screen door.
Oh.
Because it, you know, you have no resistance to it. You don't have to resist it as much as you let it be, but you realize that, you know, others can, but I'm not particularly inclined. That way, you're not going around spending your energy and spinning your wheels trying to fight against ideas rather than
right
moving towards the things that you want to explore that are important to you.
Right, absolutely.
So,
that's a waste of energy.
So being able to look at any degree of thought, any organization, any religious approach, any spiritual whatever, we realize that there wouldn't be people following that if it wasn't giving them something that supports what they're trying to do here in physical form. You know, it just, people don't do things because they don't work. It's doing something in their life. The key factor would be to find out what it is doing, validate that so that they can get done with it and move on if they need to. You know, like people will go through what they call addictions, whether it would be sex or drugs or certain kind of work or relationships.
Or all of the above.
All of the above. And all those things are, is they're simply retardant factors so that you don't come on into your consciousness too soon.
Right, right.
You know, so you will find something that'll slow you down. It's almost like dragging your foot on the ground as the car's taking off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait a minute, guys, wait a minute, wait. I don't want to go here yet, you know. And so that is, in one way, that was true in my life, by the way. I went through a very powerful fundamental phase in the 1970s.
Oh.
Just during the time when all of that stuff was breaking open, because I wanted to live another 10 years or so as a, what you might call, a enculturated normie in the world.
Yes.
Rather than get into all this wacky stuff that you know
woo-woo.
Is going to
yes.
be part of your journey later on. So,
right.
You know, when I got married at age, 22 or so.
Oh, dear.
I was married for 10 years, and then we went our separate ways. And at the same time, I left the fundamentalist church I was part of and went on to explore. At that time, my gateway into it was reading people like Richard Bach, Wayne Dyer, and Shakti Gawain.
Yeah.
Those were wonderful eye-openers and wake-up calls for me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, people were literally yelling at me saying, you know, what you're doing is wrong, don't do this, blah, 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 you're being sucked into a cult, or this, that, and the other. You know, one man's cult is another man's community.
right. And it
was just all in how, whether it serves you or whether you're serving it.
Right.
And even if you're serving it, it's serving you in some way because, you know, even if it's the retardant factor.
Absolutely.
I'll tuck in something here that might be a little bit dynamic and maybe even shocking for a few people. But I always do that in the presence of a zany mystic anyway. But you take something like abuse, early childhood abuse, whether it's emotional, sexual, psychological, even physical abuse. In the life of, if you'll notice, the lives of people who often end up with that or start out with that in their experience, many of them are very, very sensitive and very open souls. And sometimes they hire a person on some level. They put out a contract on themselves to have someone come in and traumatize them to such a degree that they shut some of that down.
Huh.
For a period of time, because otherwise they'd burn up if they came on too soon. It's like you're building a fire, you know, and you put the kindling in there and you light the fire. If you put gasoline on it, it's going to go, you know, it's going to go up
right
and out. But if you want it to take time, if you want to savor the experience of slow awakening into that new consciousness, you might, you know, bring in something that is admittedly very unpleasant, even painful.
Mm-hmm.
And it may shut you down for 10, 20 years until at some point someone is able to go into that place and pull the thorn out.
Mm.
And when they do, not only do they take away the pain, but there's an opening there that was created by the thorn. That then becomes an entry point for all kinds of new stuff, new spiritual, whatever.
Mm.
But first of all, they have to go through the experience of anger, rage, fear, bitterness, resentment, and express all that and be okay with all that because those are all valid and human attributes too. But then at some point in time, what is the word? I think Madonna said something that really struck me one day in one of her writings. She said, only the hand that hurts you can heal you.
Mm-hmm.
Only the hand that inflicted the pain can take it away. And to me, that said, when I'm able to look through the experience and see the overall benefit, that came to me, regardless of the pain, regardless of the shock, regardless of, in many cases, some of the loss. And sometimes you can only see that years later, in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell anybody that. They have to tell themselves at the right time, in the right way. And that's not to say that we should go out and abuse people and hurt them or do anything like that. That's by all means. It's not legal. It's not humane. It's not, certainly not sanctified or holy.
Right.
But there's a verse, I think, in the scriptures that say, surely even the wrath of man will praise you. The remainder of wrath will you restrain. And I think it was David that said that, one of the Proverbs, basically saying that nothing happens in your life but such that there is an ultimate benefit. And if there is no ultimate benefit, then it won't be allowed to happen. Or it will be limited in such a way that it only goes so far and then it's done.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
It does when, you know, you're ready. I mean, I've had people practically stone me for saying that.
I can imagine.
You know, particularly young women who've not gotten over the shock or pain of what it was like when somebody came at them and in a sudden and impure way. And they might still be in their state of shutdown and have to be there for several years. So if I come along and, you know, open the door again, I'm not doing them a favor. And so occasionally, you know, I'm going to see people going, you're crazy, man. I don't want to listen to any of this. And they'll walk away. And that's fine. They need to. This isn't the right way, and their way is wrong. This is just another way. This is just another way of looking at it. And if it doesn't sit for you, then don't put it on. All of us are going to be sharing insights about how we live our lives and what works and what doesn't work for us. And we don't have to fight each other over right or wrong. The question is it helpful to me or not? If it doesn't, then I leave it. Like
right.
Life is a smorgasbord, you know. You've only got one plate. You can't get everything on there. So get the best stuff and then leave the rest of it for someone else.
Right. Well, you know, it does make it a lot easier when you have an open mind and you listen to other people and how they approach things and then kind of try it on like you might try a shoe on or something. And sometimes I hear people with better ideas than the ones that I've been using, so I just kind of make a mental note, try that the next time.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's no ego involved, and you just you can simplify things quite a bit by being open to new ideas.
Yeah, and it's not that they're right ideas or wrong ideas.
Right.
It's just they're different.
Different ideas. That's right.
And try what works and the stuff that doesn't. You know, you don't have to wage a campaign against it.
Right.
A fellow who came aboard was on my Facebook page the other day, and he was talking about a particular concept that was thrown out there, and he was, you know, talking about how ridiculous it was, and he was just actually being quite rude, but. I've had so many people over the years come onto pages and in discussion groups and do that, that it's almost amusing. So I basically said, so if you don't see any wisdom in this, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you here reading this? You know, and when it came down to it, he said, well, I basically am a truth inspector, and I go around and I let people know when they're off the track.
Oh, my.
And, of course, one woman yelled at him and said, did God die and make you God? He says, I am God.
Oh, I see.
I am God.
Well.
And I go, well, the question isn't, are you God?
Right.
But when you, you know, that's a true statement. But the question is, I'm God and you're not?
Right. Yes.
That's when it gets a little funky.
Yes, they leave out
that's
that
when
other
we
part.
Start moving into this area called narcissism, malignant yes. narcissism.
Yep, very true, very true. And it does seem like there are too many gods floating around in this planet right now trying to play God, and many of them have different ideas than the other ones. So,
mm-hmm.
Oh, which brings me to the to this series that I started watching, and it's called American Gods, and it's actually pretty darn clever.
Uh-huh.
So if you like the idea of something that's really well-written and surreal, it's a battle between the old gods and the new gods. And
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of funny stuff that goes on and a lot of profound stuff. And for a while, you just don't know who's who, and because the gods aren't telling. You know, they don't talk about themselves as gods. But it's a really quite a good series. It's I think it's got one season out now.
Well, that sounds exciting. Well, and isn't it wonderful to watch the new trend for covering all of these great esoteric subjects?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, over the years, it's been picking up momentum. Fortunately, you know, it is profitable, which will always be a motivation for Hollywood and to put things together.
Right.
But it's also interesting as all get out.
Oh, know? It really is.
When we bring in sci-fi and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Back in 2002, there was a wonderful series that Steven Spielberg put together called Taken.
Oh, that was that's
which
one
was
of
a
my...
wonderful compendium
yeah.
of not only the UFO history, but it also talked about the breeding and formation development of a star kid.
Yes, that was a brilliant piece of work.
Brilliant,
absolutely
piece of
brilliant.
Work. Absolutely love that.
Yep, me
and,
too. And he did another one, I think, called AI.
Yes,
which
right,
I
yes,
thought was extremely well done.
Now AI is something that we are on the brink of, just like when they did the Large Hadron Collider there in CERN, Switzerland.
Yes.
And they were standing at the gateway going, should I or shouldn't I? Well, of course, in human nature, the minute you ask yourself, should I or shouldn't I, you darn well know we will.
Right, right.
Because people are much more inclined towards taking a chance than they are towards taking the safe road.
Oh, sure. Spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel. And there's a whole lot of stuff that came out of that. I mean, if you've been studying this manifestation of multidimensionality called, what is that called now? Some people believe that it's an actual result of the fact that we did blow up our universe when they
yes.
first entered into that.
Yes, I've heard that.
What's that factor? That's a factor... Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
Oh,
we've been
golly.
Talking about it a bit online.
I can't think of it either. I think it was a little kid, a genius that was...
Mandela effect. The Mandela effect.
There you go. Yes, the Mandela
and,
effect.
And I just sometimes I have to put the little hourglass up in my brain and say, searching, searching. But the Mandela effect being an actual... manifestation of the fact that we aren't in the same universe we were in when they first turned that machine on.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And so...
time for an
you know,
chip
the same
upgrade.
Thing's going to be true of AI, too. The big question is if we make these machines smart, what's going to happen when they get smarter than we are and decide we're redundant, we're no longer needed?
Right. Well... I suppose there's a place for everything and everything in its place.
And it could be that our place might be in the dumpster at some point.
That could be, and it may be just comfy as heck.
Yeah, well, we will join the rank of once was and has been. So.
That's right. We had our
But,
moment.
You know, it was just like that back at the Tower of Babel when you you look at the idea that men were building this tower to go into heaven.
Oh, yeah.
And they yeah. said, behold, everyone is of one language
uh-huh.
and of one mind and of one heart. And God looked down and said, if we let this oneness keep on going, you know, pretty soon it's gonna be a mess. And so he mixed up all the languages and put us into sects and divisions and narrowed everybody down to Republicans and Democrats.
I have a not funny really. Feeling that was not the God with a capital G, but maybe one of the lesser gods or the alien
one of them,
gods.
Yeah, one of them. And well, you know, scrambled the languages, but now we're getting to the place where we're even, you know, circumventing that.
Yes, yes.
And with the internet and with Google Translator, and even more so when we go telepathic.
Absolutely, and that's a natural skill. Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel, we have come to the end of another wonderful show.
Yes, always too short, but it's always a joy.
Yep.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, it's been
me.
A pleasure and a joy talking to you again. And we put your websites up on the site so people can find them.
Yep.
And you're on Facebook, and you have a lively presence there. So I recommend people check your Facebook presence out.
Yeah, it's a fun format. I've been working a little on Twitter, but haven't developed it too much. Can't have a hard time narrowing it down to 160 or whatever they are.
Well, we've got to narrow it down to zero because we're out of time. I'm sorry. We just kind of ran out of time. And I want to thank you for being on tonight.
And thank you for inviting me.
Okay. All right. Good night.